And welcome to the show, Mike Kelly. He is a hockey analyst. You see him on the NHL Network. He works with Sport Logic with an emphasis on the analytics side of the world of sports. Mike has been a good guest with us in the past. Joins us this morning. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, guys. I'm doing great. How are you?
Excellent. Thanks. Really appreciate it. You were hearing anything about the Seattle job? Can you give Simmer a hint or two?
No, I have no idea. The insider game is not my game, but it sounds like from what I've heard and what you guys have heard also that Rod Brind'Amour, who you're talking about, may not want to leave Carolina. It kind of almost sounds like he'll either coach there or just maybe not coach if it doesn't work out. But that's just, you know, what we're all hearing. So your guess is as good as mine.
Yeah. All right, good stuff. Let's get to let's start with last night's game out in Vegas. And I know you tweeted out after period one that, you know, the Montreal dominated the slot shots and, you know, lots of good stuff happening for Montreal, and yet they exit with a 1-0 deficit. You said you'd take that period if you're Montreal 10 times out of 10. What was your thought on how the rest of the game played out?
A little different. A little different from the first period. So, look, the one thing that I noticed about the second periods in the playoffs for sure is that the more skilled teams, the quicker teams really get a leg up with that long change. And being at home, obviously, Vegas as well, that second period, they just completely flipped the switch and dominated it. After Montreal, like you point out, had a really good first period. I know they came out of it down 1-0, but you know what I thought going into this series was the template for success for Montreal would be similar to Minnesota in the first round that they played against Vegas. And they took Vegas 7 games in that series, played them really tight. But what Minnesota was able to do was win the battle around the front of the net, get rebound chances, outshoot the opposition from those quality areas right in front of the net. And Montreal can play that game, similar to Minnesota. And that's exactly what they did in the first period. They had some good looks around Marc-Andre Fleury, a couple of good rebound opportunities. They're a shot volume team. They like to kind of shoot it from everywhere, get rebounds on angles, try to score that way. Did a good job of it. You know, like you said, the shot advantage from the slot was 6-0. From that inner slot high danger area, it was, it was 6-0 from that inner slot high danger area, 6-1 from the slot overall. So good first period. But yeah, the second period, Vegas kind of took over. And Carey Price was great. We all saw kind of the 10 bell saves he was making going left to right, right to left, highlight reel style saves. There's only so much he can do, and obviously the dam breaks at some point. Both goalies were really good, though. Like, let's not forget, if you're a Habs fan, Montreal could have had one or two pretty early on Marc-Andre Fleury. It was a great, great start for them in that game, but got away from them after that.
Mike, is the obvious that a long change, and I'll say the favorite, Vegas, first game, but that second period, when you have the right matchups and off the faceoffs, there is a huge advantage for them?
Sure, yeah. I mean, we saw two faceoff goals in the game, right? And one of the things I was looking at coming into the game is that Montreal allows a shot on goal when they lose a draw on their own end almost 30% of the time in the playoffs, which is worst of any team in the postseason. 16th out of 16. And they lost a couple draws clean. And I think that's the thing that's the killer. If you're in the D zone, it's almost like a win is if you can push. A win is if you can tie up and create a scramble, get wingers involved, and just create a bit of a mess. They lost a couple draws clean. Obviously, Vegas had the matchups that they wanted for those offensive zone faceoffs. You know, it was a tough sequence on the first one for just outside of his own blue line, and it went back in, and then Ben Sherratt had to ice the puck, and then Gustafson got beaten in the net front. Another point shot goal that was tipped in by Matthias Janmark, a great spin move off a defender there. So just a couple of battles in front of the net, that one creating a screen, one creating a tip. But again, you lose those draws clean, and you know, Vegas doesn't need a lot of advantages to beat anybody in this league, but you give them last change in an offensive zone setting that they're going to be comfortable in. You're icing pucks, you're losing net battles. They're going to make you pay for it. That's what they did.
Talking to Mike Kelly, he is a hockey analyst for the NHL Network and Sport Logic, specializing in analytics. As you assess this series before it began, Did you put special emphasis on the Vegas D in particular? Last night they had 3 of the 4 goals. 5 of the 6 defensemen ended up with at least 1 point in the game. They really seemed the game plan seemed to be to get the defense involved. Did you see that through the numbers that you were studying?
I didn't see. Look, anytime defensemen contribute that much offensively in a game, it's an outlier. It doesn't matter how good your D is. It just, you don't get that kind of production game in and game out. But look, you see the decor that they have with Theodore Martinez, Petrangelo, obviously. They've got guys that like to jump into the play, into the rush. They're a stretch pass heavy team. So you're going to get, you know, stretch pass opportunities, rush opportunities that will lead to assists and points. They had a great set play, and Kevin Bieksa pointed it out on the broadcast, offensive zone faceoff win in the left circle where Petrangelo just jumps from the weak side right into the slot, and he kind of mishandled the puck, but we saw him do a lot of that in St. Louis and does it in Vegas as well. So they create opportunities for their defensemen to be involved offensively, and last night's a game where, you know, some pucks went in and some points pile up, and I'd be shocked if you get that kind of production again in the next game. But yeah, it doesn't mean that you don't have to watch for these guys to jump low in the offensive zone and jump into the rush and create a second wave of offense. Because, you know, most of their D are capable of doing it. And, you know, Montreal's really got one guy that does it well, and that's a guy that wasn't in the lineup, Jeff Petrie. Romanov, you know, kind of likes to jump up a little bit, but I don't really know that that's his game. And then they got some heavier guys that, you know, it's really just not what they do. So Vegas will certainly be the team that you'll see more D getting low and D getting into the rush than Montreal in the series, for sure.
Mike, I think we also saw last night some great saves, but similar to the Toronto series, I thought the Leafs did a great job of getting Price moving laterally. They either didn't connect or he made the saves. Did you see that as part of the game plan for Vegas, especially on the Martinez goal?
Yeah, well, what a pump fake that was by Shea Theodore.
Like, he almost broke his arms and his legs.
Yeah, he almost broke my brain. I was watching it, and he kind of does that. I thought he stumbled. Yeah. The game. It looked kind of awkward, but he faked it so well. And then to be able to execute that pass kind of off balance, my goodness. That was great. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm watching it, and I'm watching Price, and I'm like, oh, my God, you might get this. He might get across and make the Superman save.
Yeah.
But, you know, it wasn't to be. But, yeah, look, anytime you can get a goalie moving laterally in the net, it's going to work to your advantage. One of the funny kind of, you know, when I look at goalies in the playoffs and try to assess strengths and weaknesses, it's such a small sample, it's really tough to do. One of the funny things about Carey Price in these playoffs is when he's gone laterally from his glove side to his blocker side, so left to right in the net, his save percentage has been well over 900. It's been exceptional, best of any goalie. When he's gone, it's been somewhere in the 600, 630, I think, going into that game, lowest of any goalie. Now, we saw him make the highlight reel save going across on Mark Stone with the glove, and he made a couple going the other way, too. So yeah. I don't know there's anything to read into that. It's just one of those kind of funny outliers. So I talked to a coach about this. I said, if you saw that going into a game against this goalie, would you do anything different? And, you know, this, I think, again, is a great lesson in understanding analytics and how to apply analytics. And you might think, yeah, you know, let's load up on the right side and try to get one-timers on the right side, get him going to that glove where he's been weak. But then you start messing with your own game and messing with your own players' heads. So his thought was, just try to spend more time in the O-zone, and those kind of plays will come organically. Because if you start trying to change what you're doing, that's where you can get into trouble. So anyways, look, yeah, get a goalie moving laterally if you can, but both of these guys in general are so good that, you know, you kind of need traffic, rebound, and chaos to beat them.
And funny, having played the position very poorly, Mike, back in the day for myself, I would but I would say as a goaltender, sincerely, what happens on your blocker side is that there's a tendency to be able to hold your arm a little bit better with your stick, but there's also a theory and a thought you don't even subconsciously, but if you watch it, the goaltender will actually move closer towards the shooter on his blocker side, where you have more of a tendency to dive towards the post with your glove. So that to me would be part of the rationale of why that might happen on goaltenders. Also, having you on, I read your piece on the the Islander-Tampa series. So certainly some great thoughts there. Thoughts on the Islanders and why they were capable of winning in Game 1 and kind of going forward for the style they're playing.
So what do you guys think of the Islanders? Do you like watching them?
I don't mind it. I don't, you know, there's points of series where I've kind of said, okay, not, but I appreciate it because I love Barry Trotz. I love Pageau. I know that they're not flash and dash, but I also appreciate that tactically they play hard and they have everybody buy in. So I don't turn it off at this point, but they're not one of the sexier teams. But I, you know, it's also, as I said, I think people just get carried away with the teams that aren't exciting all the time.
Yeah, fair enough. And, you know, when they get out to a lead, they really know how to lock it down. And I think that kind of makes it less exciting. But of the remaining teams in the playoffs, they're the highest scoring team. Only Colorado's averaging more goals per game, and they're out, obviously. I honestly have said it before. I think the only thing boring about the Islanders is that other teams can't score on them. When it's 4-1 or 3-1, they're not making mistakes that send the game to overtime and give you a crazy game. They lock it down and they win. So what, you know, when I think about the Islanders, I love their attention to detail. I love the way they play. I think we're talking about hockey being the ultimate team sport, right? I think that's why a lot of people love it. It's you can't just LeBron a team and bring a guy in and go to the finals every year. The Islanders embody what it means to be a team more than anyone else in the NHL. They're the best example of the sum being greater than its parts. And I respect that, and I appreciate that. Everybody on that team has a job to do and a particular role. And they execute top to bottom better than anybody. And it's why they're successful. And so when I look at the Islanders, I look at Barry Trotz, and I've looked heavily into this because I love the way that he coaches. And I love the way that they value puck management over puck possession. We hear puck possession all the time in the league now. And for me, it is nothing more than a means to an end. I don't care if you've got the puck all night long. Are you getting quality looks? Are you giving up fewer quality looks and ultimately scoring more and allowing less? There are teams that don't need to possess the puck a lot to do that. I'd rather be that team than the team that skates around the outside, and the Islanders will let you do that. So I love the way they manage the puck. I love the fact that they can dump pucks in, have a plan to go get the puck back. Which you have to be able to do in the playoffs. How many times do we see teams in the playoffs that overhandle the puck, Toronto Maple Leafs, and ultimately don't have a ton of success?
Yeah.
And they do it at the wrong times. You think about Mitch Marner in Game 7, a turnover at the offensive blue line, trying to beat three defensemen or three players on his own. Islanders don't do that. So I just appreciate the style of game they play. It is exactly what you need to do in the postseason. They're good enough to win in the regular season as well. I honestly think that, you know, a lot of people coming into the conference final were probably like, well, Tampa and Vegas, that'd be such a great final. I think the Islanders-Vegas final, that would be the final people think a Tampa-Vegas final would be. Oh. So, I'd love to see that one.
With Mike Kelly, hockey analyst for NHL Network, and with Sport Logic. I agree with you what you've said about the Islanders, and another thing is just watching the games in their barn, in particular with the fans, is just makes it so, there's so much energy there. It's awesome. How come, Mike, more teams just don't play that way?
It's hard. Honestly, it's stopping and starting on pucks instead of, you know, doing a loop. It's putting a puck in a corner and having a plan to go get it back and dig it out. You know, they've got skill. Like, I don't want to talk about them like all they do is strap the work boots on and grind. They've got skill. But look, not every team's built the same, right? There are teams that it would be ill-advised to suggest that they should go out and play the way that the Islanders play. So you can't just blanket it across the league, I don't think. But at the same time, a lot of the reason why they're successful is that they don't make those mental mistakes as often as some other teams. And, you know, it's not easy to do. It's not easy to play with that kind of focus every game in and game out. They're able to do it.
Good stuff. Mike, always appreciate your time and your insight. I know that you look at the numbers. What were your predictions for these two series, just out of interest?
Islanders, Vegas.
Okay, there we go.
I think Tampa's winning tonight, though. I think that's going to be a 7-gamer no matter what. So we'll see.
We'll see starting tonight. Okay, appreciate the time as always. And thanks, and we'll chat again down the road.
Okay, guys, take care.
All right.